Hello, and welcome to Viewpoints, a weekly program of information on the ever-changing world of accessibility. Now here are the hosts of this program, Nancy Goodman-Torpy and Peter Torpy.
Hello, I'm Nancy.
And I'm Pete. In this week's show, we'll be talking about employment and training at the Association for the Blind and Visually Impaired in Rochester, New York.
And that will include orientation and mobility training, employment and job training, and a recent technology fair that they ran. But first, for our tip of the week. This week's tip is that there are people and organizations who can help you, and the Association for the Blind and Visually Impaired in Rochester, New York is just one of them. If you're fairly new to being blind, you're just losing your vision, don't worry. There's stuff that you haven't figured out how to do yet, but they probably have, and they can help you work out ways of doing what you want to do.
Yeah, you should look for organizations like this in your town. There are many organizations like this around the country and, you know, hopefully wherever you're located.
So let's meet the people who gave us our tour.
Gidget Hoff, and I'm president and CEO of ABVI Goodwill.
And I'm Todd Pipitone. I'm the public relations manager for ABVI Goodwill.
Our mission, which we're very proud of, is to prepare and empower people who are blind or visually impaired for self-sufficiency and contributions to their families and communities. And it's a very empowering mission statement in that once we give you, we just give the tools. We just help give the solutions. Once we do that, then people are empowered and enabled to really contribute in any way they choose and depending on where they are in their phase of life. You know, what does it mean for an 85-year-old to be self-sufficient and contribute to their family and community? Well, if a person who's lost their sight late in life can now take their own medication, get to the mailbox and get their mail, and they're not dependent on their adult son or daughter or grandchildren to do that for them, well, what a great contribution, you know, not to mention the dignity of being able to be independent and not have that dependence on family. And what does, you know, it mean for a working age person? Well, obviously, you know, to become self-sufficient, to have that job. Well, one of the things we're most proud of is the jobs that we create here for people who are blind or visually impaired. We create jobs here, but we also train people and prepare them for jobs in other fields as well, in other industries outside of ABVI.
And these organizations can be very useful, as Gidget said, in many phases of your life. In fact, just before I went to graduate school, I precipitously lost a lot of my sight and was unable to see and had to get trained in using a cane, which I had never used before, and relearn Braille math and things like that. And there was an organization similar to ABVI on Long Island, where I was living at the time, where I went to a six-week program where they taught me these kind of life skills and refreshed some of these things. So here I was preparing for graduate school, but yet there were some people there that were just preparing for life, and they were learning how to, you know, make a bologna sandwich or eat off a plate. Other skills they were being taught were how to sew on a button, for example, and just how to keep your apartment clean and vacuum and things like that. So they cover the whole span of things.
And actually, a lot of those life skills training issues we covered in show 1148. But in this week's show, we'll be talking about other kinds of training that they provide. So stay tuned for that. Turning now to our low-tech item, we'll be talking about orientation and mobility training at the Association for the Blind and Visually Impaired with Casey Hopper, their O&M specialist, whom we met at the recent technology fair, which we'll be talking about later in the show.
I am Casey Hopper, the orientation and mobility specialist here at ABVI. Personally, I'm visually impaired, and as an orientation mobility specialist, I'm out in the community a lot, and so I have the iPhone, which has the navigation apps, things like that, so I'm able to get around Rochester using all my navigation apps, using the buses, walk around the streets, because I can't see the street signs, so my GPS has helped me do that.
And what is your visual impairment?
Retinitis pigmentosa, or RP for short. I'm one of the few O&M orientation mobility specialists out there who's visually impaired.
So do you use a cane yourself?
At nighttime, I do. My eye disease causes really bad night blindness.
Oh, that's interesting. So you can see well enough to navigate during the day.
I can.
So do you train people on using these, or you're strictly a mobility and orientation trainer?
Orientation and mobility, I train the cane, and then if they have a GPS that they want to be trained on, whether it's on the iPhone or a separate GPS, that's what I train on, is how to use that GPS properly when you're walking around.
You know, one thing they taught me when I was learning my cane, I had a little bit of vision at the time, and, you know, I wanted to practice blindfolded. And they said, you know, the real point is learn how to use your cane, but when you're getting around, make use of everything you have. If you have a little bit of vision, make use of that. So I think the same holds true for if you have a GPS unit, make use of that. I mean, all these things kind of complement each other, and whatever works for a particular circumstance is a good thing.
So we had a really nice chat with Casey, and among other things, I took the opportunity to ask him about my pet peeve. You know, a lot of communities are putting in curb cuts because people in wheelchairs really need them. People with walkers make good use of them. People with strollers, kids on bicycles. The curb cuts are a really good idea. And they've actually started putting in heavily textured pads so that the visually impaired don't inadvertently walk out into traffic. My pet peeve is that they're putting these in at all sorts of crazy angles. And so I asked Casey, what do you do about that?
Once you hit the curb cut with the cane, it's how the person navigates it using traffic sounds, lining up with traffic. And that's what helps them cross the street safely. The curb cut and all those are there to help them not walk into the street. If they miss the curb cut, then they're most likely going to hit the curb, which is great.
That's even better.
Exactly.
Because those curb cuts are so shallow, you
exactly.
don't know you're walking down if you go fast.
Exactly.
What if you're in the suburbs? How do you know which direction to go?
A lot of it is training with mobility and understanding, finding certain ways. If you're lined up straight, you keep that line of travel off the sidewalk. If there's a way to line up, stepping over a little bit with the curb, you can do that. If there's hardly inner traffic, there's ways to get around that. And it takes that training to go through for someone to go over and look at it and go, well, you can line up with this tree. You know what I mean?
It's, right. Here are some ideas for this type of situation.
Exactly. You know, and as an O&M specialist, it's our job to problem solve that. And we do and we will.
But that means you really need to train the individual pedestrian at every single intersection because the curb cuts are all different.
Yes and no. I mean, if it's a route that they're walking regularly, then we'll work on that route. If they're a traveler that's getting around a lot, that means that we're going to teach them skills that are transferable. It wouldn't be that we'd have to teach them every single intersection. If they're walking a long route, then absolutely we'll look at every single intersection. But if it's skills that are transferable...
So you basically... You let the government do whatever they're doing on the curb cuts, and then you teach the individual how to compensate for whatever the government did.
You know, and I sometimes wish that they could come to us and ask for recommendations and things like that.
Yeah.
Most cities are just trying to follow ADA, you know,
right.
and get them in as soon as possible.
Right.
You know, we live in a world that's, you know, is for sighted people. And then so we train people to navigate that world to the best of their ability with, you know, a positive attitude and say, you know, I can't fix everything, but I can fix the way I travel and the way I feel about it, you know. And so it's definitely a challenge, but, you know, personally as a visually impaired individual, I love a challenge.
You are listening to Viewpoints.
This week's focus topic is employment and job training at the Association for the Blind and Visually Impaired here in Rochester, New York. It turns out they run quite a huge operation. They've got a lot of activity. They've got training and employment for people in a large variety of fields. Here's Gidget Hopf again.
We consider ourselves a social enterprise, and a social enterprise is a, I guess it's a mission. We have a mission, but we're a business. Or we're a business with a mission. We haven't figured it out. We're having an identity crisis. Our mission generates revenue to continue to perpetuate the services. But in doing so, we're also fulfilling our mission by creating training opportunities and job opportunities for people who are blind. So we have four of these social enterprises. One is our manufacturing division, which has been around a long time. We manufacture products for the federal government, for the military. And many of our employees who are blind, or most of our employees who are blind, cannot serve in the military. On the other hand, they're providing service to the military by sewing the clothing that our men and women in uniform wear in Iraq and Afghanistan, and they're very proud of that. We also manufacture products, office products like Post-it notes. We manufacture all of the Post-it notes for the federal government. We call them self-stick notes because Post-it is the 3M brand, but all the raw material comes from 3M. And then a myriad of contracts that provide jobs for people of all skill levels. We have very low-skill jobs and we have very high-skill jobs. Then we also have our call center. And our call center is a place where people who don't aspire to manufacturing-type work, they may have more skills, they may be looking for some more challenge, can work in the call center. And our call center is also a service to the federal government. We are the national lead poisoning and toxic substance hotline for all of North America, and that's a contract with the Environmental Protection Agency. So anybody has a question about lead poisoning, lead paint in their house, how to transport toxic substances through borders, how to become a contractor who's certified to remove lead from houses, they call an 800 number and they get people right here on Clinton Avenue in Rochester answering their questions. And these are people who are blind, who are using the adaptive technology that you know so much about to be able to do their jobs and do it really, really well. We also have in our call center, we are the 211 Lifeline Center here. So 211 is an information and referral line. Anybody who doesn't know where to turn, call 211, and 211 can point anybody in any direction depending on what their needs are. If, you know, my mom has Alzheimer's, I need help finding her services. My mom just moved here, she's blind, where do I go? The other thing you get at 211 is a suicide and crisis hotline. So we actually are saving people's lives on a daily basis. So that's our call center. The other one is our food service arm. Food service is a program we have with the county. The county contracts with us to provide all the meals to the senior centers in Monroe County. So there's 22 senior centers, and we provide about 1,500 to 2,000 meals every day. And that's where seniors come to various locations for their social recreation activities, and they get a meal, and we provide that meal. As a result of that, we've been able to expand to provide meals to child daycare centers and charter schools. What that also enables us to do is to provide an in-house cafe for our employees and our visitors. So we have a really nice cafe because many of our folks don't have the luxury of walking out at lunchtime and getting in a car and driving to a local restaurant like I do. And so having a really nice place to have a meal and a hot meal, both breakfast and lunch. The fourth line of business that we have is our Goodwill thrift stores and our donated goods program. So in 1994, I forged a relationship with Goodwill, and we became the third New York member of Goodwill. And that enabled us to begin a donated goods program, collecting donated goods and opening up retail thrift shops that employed people who were blind and other people with other disabilities as well.
So the last line of business she mentioned was the thrift shops. Pretty much everybody we know goes to them one way or another, including their staff.
By the way, that's a great shirt.
You know where I got this?
I can't imagine.
Blue. You know our new blue? Goodwill boutique in Ooh. Pittsford Plaza.
Is that right?
It's a designer Ann Klein. I got it for next to nothing.
Is that right? It's got eyeballs all over it.
Is that right? It's got black and white silk eyeballs. I saw that and said, I have to have that.
So we've talked about how diverse their business operations are. It turns out that among them, they're really pretty huge. They employ a lot of people.
The Goodwill store will put us over about 525 people. 20 to 25% of those are people who are blind, but a good more number are also people. If we added in people with other disabilities and barriers, that number would be a lot higher.
So the 525 is just at the Goodwill stores?
No, that's the total organization.
Total ABVI.
Yeah, including the call center and everybody in this building.
So that includes you too.
Right. Mm-hmm. You know, we make a real effort to recruit people who are blind in all levels. So, for example, in IT, we have two experts in adaptive technology. Because we have so many adaptive technology users. We're such a unique organization because the call center alone has, you know, 25, 35 people who are dependent for their job on adaptive technology, not to mention then many of the people who work in throughout the organization. So our IT department really prides itself on having expertise in adaptive technology.
That was a lot bigger organization than I thought it was. It was really interesting to learn how many people they keep employed in Rochester.
So they've actually integrated all of these employment opportunities into their other services. Not only do they provide job training for everybody they subsequently hire, but because the manufacturing facilities generate income, they can use that to fund their other services.
As our businesses expand and we can generate more money, we can do more because most of these services are not paid for by any, you know, formal bodies. We get a little bit of money here and a little bit of money there from Medicare and whatnot, but it covers, you know, less than 50% of the cost.
So when someone comes in, I can imagine folks asking, you know, if they come in for, you know, like glasses, clearly they pay for the glasses or an eye exam. I don't know, does medical pay for that? Or if they come in for mobility training, does the state pay?
It all depends. The state is very, very constraining. The state pays for only folks who are in a vocational track, so somebody who is on their way to earning a job. That's federal monies that come through the Vocational Rehabilitation Administration, and the monies are very constrained. And not everybody who comes here is going to work. They may have finished their career work, or they may be very young children. There's very little money, if any, for young children. So that's why we have to generate our own resources. Medicare will pick up the cost of a low vision exam, but they won't pay for any of the devices. Nobody will pay for a cane. So for the most part, those things are, people have to buy themselves. So we introduce people to this great technology that we have now, and there is some great technology, but it's unaffordable by many.
Right.
Yeah, we do have a loan closet, so as people return, you know, their mother or father has passed away, they'll return their equipment. And so if people can benefit from something, we're certainly happy to loan it.
You know, I think that's a really great model for the organization. I mean, in terms of them generating a lot of their own revenue, they really have a great chance of being self-sustaining. And there's just so much money that people are going to get from governments and you know, donations as budgets get tighter and things like that. So that's really a great model that's geared for success, I guess. And a lot of these services can be pretty expensive. You know, as Gidget points out, you know, technology has made some great advances. There are great devices and software programs, other things available to help the visually impaired, but they're often pretty expensive, let alone just paying for the people that have to do the training and provide the other services associated with the training. So that's really a great idea to be bringing in some of your own money. And in the process, they're employing some of the visually impaired folks to help bring in the money to sustain their organization.
So we got really lucky. We got to go on a tour of the manufacturing facilities. Certain parts were too loud for us to be able to get any kind of decent audio recordings for the show, like the Self-Stick Notes manufacturing facility, but we were really interested in what we were able to see there. But here's our tour of the sewing department, and it's really amazing. You know, they seem to have thought of pretty much everything to enable people with visual impairments to succeed on their own.
What we're going into now, this is our sewing facility, and as you can hear, they're actually production, and they are producing garments for the United States Air Force.
But that's a lot of sewing machines.
My name is Joyelle Bennett. I'm the Director of Manufacturing and Food Service here, and that was our sewing production line. It's we're building pants for the United States Air Force. So these are actual physical training pants that our men and women in the United States Air Force wear when they're doing their PT or their physical training. We've been making those just about 7 years now on the production line. They're a navy blue pant, and they have about 26 different sewing operations that make them up. The pants essentially go through the production line, and at each stage someone is doing basically one operation on one machine. So this department employs mostly people who are blind or visually impaired. There is some fully sighted labor on this production line to supplement that. I think it's a very interesting production line because we have about 6 different languages spoke in the department. We have an individual who is blind and also hearing impaired. We are able to produce about 200 pair of pants off the line every single day.
So, wow.
Yeah, so even with all of those, what we would maybe call, others might call challenges, we just, that's just part of our normal day. So we do a lot of sewing. We have about 31 people employed in the department right now. We also have, unique to this department, We have a full-time trainer who's an expert sewer, and she will teach an individual who's blind how to do the job properly. So they teach them all about the machine, in some cases how to thread the machine, also how to perform the operation to quality standards and to, you know, constantly increase the speed because, of course, you need to be at production speeds as well. So
do you have adaptations on the sewing machines?
Yes, we have some. We used sort of, I guess the best way to describe it would be like a raised type of guide. So where someone might use their vision to keep the sewing work straight, our employees might use a tactile guide to kind of make sure the work is going straight through there. We'll use whatever the employee needs. If they need a different lighting scheme, if they need the table to potentially be a different color, if they need the tactile guide, we'll try to do whatever creative methods we can, working with that individual because it's very individualized. Mm-hmm. So what might work for one person might not work for somebody else. So.
Cool. So you must have special concerns with safety and things like that. Are there any special things you need to do, you know, in a manufacturing facility that other folks wouldn't?
Well, in general, in a manufacturing facility, I feel we have a very safe operation. In certain areas, certain personal protective equipment is required. That would be if people are moving pallets and things like that, they might be required to wear steel-toe shoes. In the sewing department, we have needle guards on the machines, which protect you from essentially getting your finger under the machine. A lot of it is also training, making sure people know not to put their hands in where moving parts are. I think people are very cautious of that, and we train them, you know, how to operate the equipment safely in all the areas.
As Joelle mentioned, they make many custom accommodations for individuals to make them capable of doing these manufacturing jobs that might otherwise be difficult for the visually impaired. In addition, one thing we noticed when walking around was not only were the manufacturing jobs themselves made very accessible, but just in terms of getting around the plant and the facilities, the floors were sometimes textured so you would know where you were, and one wouldn't stray off accidentally into an area where there might be moving devices or things that you should not be near. There were kind of hand railings on some of the walls if you wanted to follow that and be a little bit more safe. So there were a lot of just even navigational accommodations around the building and structures. They had a cafeteria there for their workers. Some of the workers actually prepared the food. But again, that was all very accessible. And, you know, people were told what was on the menu and things like that. So altogether, it was a very friendly, easy environment to be in for a visually impaired person. They really did a great job of making it possible for people to work and making it safe for them. And as Nancy mentioned, we did see some other facilities. We did see the facility where they made the stick-on labels, like the 3M sticky tapes. And boy, there were tons of that stuff. It was very loud in that room, so we were unable to get any good recordings. But again, you got to see how these visually impaired folks could work with large pieces of equipment, heavy pieces of equipment. In this case, they had a cut-up big sheets of paper with very sharp knives. These things are powerful. They're cutting through hundreds of sheets of paper at a time. But again, that was made very safe with good interlocks and barriers for protecting people so they didn't lose any fingers or hands or things like that. And they managed to be producing products that they could actually sell and make money from and fund the rest of their organization. So one other interesting thing that Gidget mentioned earlier on was they had a kind of a lending library of different things. If you have an organization like this in your town and you have some equipment you're not using that others might find useful, you might consider donating some of this equipment to that organization so other people can make use of it. And we've done plenty of that in the past when I've outgrown some equipment or gotten something new.
Now for this week's high-tech item. The Association for the Blind and Visually Impaired in Rochester, New York, held its first technology fair a couple of months ago in September 2011. And we went because we wanted to see what was new and what all they were showing off. We got to meet some vendors, some trainers. They held some seminars. In particular, we attended the seminars on using the Nook and OverDrive to get e-books from the library, and we highlighted that in show 1149. We met a number of vendors who sell a variety of items, And we talked to them about being able to have them on the show later in 2012.
You know, these technology fairs can really be a lot of fun. It's a great way of seeing all in one place some devices and products that you would normally have a hard time seeing. I mean, you can't go down to your local Kmart and find a reading machine or a closed-circuit TV system that'll enlarge stuff for you. So this is a great way of comparing products side by side, chatting with the vendors, and you know, making a sensible decision, as well as learning a lot from these people.
Right, and they're very knowledgeable about the differences between the assortment of products that they have, and I think it'll be really exciting to talk to them on this show, and we'll just do, you know, a special show with each vendor's line of products. Largely a lot of magnifiers, but they also have reading machines, digital book players, GPS units, note takers, braille displays, you know, a lot of great technology to help the visually impaired get around in the world and take care of daily tasks.
Yeah, so look for technology fairs in your area, and they can be useful things.
And we also talked to some trainers. You heard us talking to Casey Hopper from ABVI about orientation and mobility. That you could hear that the technology fair was really exciting from all the noise in the background there. But he was there actually because he trains people on the whole suite of Apple products, the iPhone, the iPad, et cetera. And, you know, so maybe we'll be able to talk to him about some of those devices later. Ann Parsons was there. She tutors people in using adaptive products and also in academics. So if you want to get more information about the Association for the Blind and Visually Impaired, you can go to their website, which is www.seegreatthings.com. That's all one word. Their local telephone number is area code 585-232-1111, or they can be reached toll-free at 800-640-6005.
And again, in case you didn't catch any of those phone numbers or web addresses from this show or any other show, go to the website, www.viewpointsplus.net, and look for the show notes associated with each show to get all that stuff.
That's it for this week's show. Next week on Viewpoints, we'll be talking about extreme sports for the blind, skiing and snowboarding. In the dead of winter, if you want to have fun in certain parts of the world, it has to include the snow. And we'll be talking to a high school student who's in training. She hopes to make the United States team for the International Paralympics taking place in Moscow in 2014. And so we're really excited about getting to know her and see how you can ski at the very highest levels of competition without being able to see. If you have any questions regarding something you've heard about on the show, or you'd like to share an idea for a future show, send an email to viewpoints@wxxi.org or call us at 585-258-0333, and we'll try to address your question in an upcoming program.
You've been listening to Viewpoints, produced by Peter Torpy and Nancy Goodman Torpy in collaboration with WXXI Reach Out Radio. To subscribe to the podcast, access a full archive of shows and show notes, or to find out more, visit www.viewpointsplus.net. We hope you'll join us again next week for more information and updates on products for accessible living. Thanks for listening to Viewpoints, and have a nice day.